the OTV Sports app. Listen to OTV Sports Radio 24/7, plus all your favorite podcasts, including OTV Gold.
Are you a complete rookie?
The OTV Sports app, available to download now from your app store. The OTV Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Okay, hurling legend and current senior Kilkenny hurling selector DJ Carey was at the AirGrid official timing sponsorship launch, which was happening today. Now, AirGrid, the state-owned company that develops and manages the flow of electricity across Ireland, has been a proud partner of the GEA since 2015. Delighted to say that DJ Carey is with us now. How are you getting on, DJ?
I'm good. And yourself?
Very well, thanks. So 25 days out is what I'm seeing here from Kilkenny's championship opener, a do-or-die clash against Dublin or Laois. Does it feel like that you're just over 3 weeks away from such a huge fixture?
Yeah, it's a funny one, to be honest, because you're in winter and we're just basically back a couple of weeks now with the county team. Obviously, we were looking at the club action up to now, so it's a little bit unusual, and it's just one of these things that you have to start. We are obviously getting prepared for, and Dublin or Laois is a huge one for us, but it's very unusual insofar as, you know, it's the year has been so long. Now, not that it's long for us in terms of training, because we wouldn't have done much, but we're now at the back end of the year, so it's a bit unusual, all right, but it's something that everyone have to get their heads around.
How are you enjoying your role as selector?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, we're busy with club action there over the summer, so it's enjoyable. But obviously, there's a serious side to it, and then there's the serious side is selecting, and then there's a side to it whereby, you know, we can only select eventually only 15 and 26 to play. So that's the difficult one. When it actually comes to the crunch of picking a team and a panel, you're leaving off. We have 36 presently on the panel. So, you know, we can only pick 26 for a match. So that's a difficult one.
It's interesting how the success that you've had so early on in your coaching career, it looked last year as if there might be a little bit of a time away from the game, perhaps this year, and then the phone call comes from Brian Cody, and it's an impossible thing to say no to. Are you happy you said yes? Are you happy you went back in? Of course, what's happened since then has obviously been incredible for everybody in the world.
Yeah. Look, I enjoy it. Sure. Look, if you have an opportunity of being... in with a legend of the game, sure, you know, it's great in itself. I've never been overly ambitious to coach or to certainly manage. You know, I enjoy it. It's a big part of my life. I have to one time I had two very small young fellas, now they're pretty big. I would have gone to all their games and done very little coaching with them in the past. Until the last couple of years, and I was always involved in some shape or form. And then Carlo IT was a big one for me for the last 8 or 9 years, and that brought me kind of back into the game. And obviously the Kilkenny under 21s and 20s, I had my couple of years doing it at under 21 and 20 level with Kilkenny, and then, you know, I was going to step aside and the call did come. So yeah, look, I'm enjoying it. It was something I wasn't expecting, but it came. I thought about it, and now involved. The year is very, very unusual. But I suppose it's a great honor for me to be involved with Brian.
Was it a deliberate thing that you mentioned there, not getting involved with the coaching of your kids and stuff like that? Was that a very deliberate decision to stay away from that at underage level?
Well, I suppose in some ways, yes, but my circumstances would have been slightly different. I would have been living in Dublin, while the lads were in Kilkenny at the time. So I wouldn't have certainly had the time to do it, even though I would rarely have missed a match. But I think it was important maybe that when they were growing up, that they were being coached by different players, good, bad, or indifferent, or different coaches, you know, because you have to learn from everyone. You have to have discipline, you know, and some fellas have different ideas, and I think that's always good to have different ideas. And as I say, I don't think there's any magic formula in the game. I don't think I have any magic formula towards anyone else, but it's always different to get someone else's view. But ultimately, you know, it's down to a player themselves to improve. You can't blame a manager, you can't blame a coach. If you want to improve at any level, at any sport, in the classroom, music or anything, it's ultimately down to yourself.
For sure. How different is the dynamic between you and Brian Cody from when you were a player to now as one of the coaches with him? Is there a different dynamic there?
Well, obviously you see a different side to a person when you're very much working closely and you're picking players rather than as a player, you know. And I probably I was involved in the beginning of Brian's inter-county career, as in coaching career, and maybe I was only there for 4 or 5 years, so he's there a long time now. But it would have been different, obviously, as a player. There's a certain distance that is kept, and I think, you know, there has to be a certain amount. If you need to talk to a player, well, that's one thing. But as a selector, you're very closely involved, and you're very closely involved in the inner thoughts of someone, what he thinks of a player, what you think of a player. Maybe you differ, and we do differ on certain things, you know, but by and large, to differ is good, but your goal is the one thing.
When you say that he may think something different about a player to what you think, what is the thing about a player that impresses Brian Cody more than anything else?
Well, obviously, it's Brian Cody's, you know, work rate was a big thing for Brian. You know, look, at the end of the day, we would expect at this level, or as any management in any county, you are getting players at the very highest level in your county. So from a coaching point of view, you shouldn't be needing to coach a guy the simple basics of the game, because they have it at that level. Now it's trying to put a team together. Now it's time to, you know, maybe tactically put tactics together and go out and do it. You're not teaching a guy how to catch a ball or strike a ball or, you know, rise a ball. That should be already done. So it's from, I suppose, Brian's point of view, it's trying to manage that. And, you know, also, you know, whatever way the game is changing, he has to analyse that and say, well, do we go with that or do we not? And some you do and some you don't. And that means then we have to try and put as much of that into training as possible.
You mentioned there that sometimes Brian has a distance that he keeps with players, which kind of needs to be done if you're going to make ruthless decisions, which are required at the very top level. One of the ways that distance often manifests itself in the stories that we hear is from players who leave the Kilkenny panel, players who retire, and the stories that they tell of ringing up Brian Cody and telling him that they're hanging up the hurley, and Brian Cody may often not be give the warmest reception back in certain cases. What was that like for you? Do you remember that moment when you actually decided to hang up the black and amber anyway for Kilkenny?
Yeah, look, I suppose... you know, I retired at 36 years of age. Well, sorry, I was going to be 36 in that year. So I couldn't have any complaints. And to be honest, for the previous couple of years, you know, in 2002, I had a number of reasonably bad injuries. I in the 2001 county final, I tore the hamstring off the bone. I actually had a pulled hamstring going into the first match. It went to a replay. I played in the replay and obviously did a lot of damage. So I was going to be out for a long period of time. I had a disc removed in my neck during that year as well. And I think around May or around that time, I had a burst appendix in 2002. So my year was gone. It was shot, you know. And sometime around the end of June, around that time, I'd done an interview with Vincent Hogan, and we left it in such a way that you can never say never. You know, I didn't retire from the game. I just thought my year was shot, it was gone. And Kilkenny didn't score a goal in the Leinster final of that year. And, you know, Brian, I got a phone call about 9 o'clock the following morning. from Brian, and he said, look, you made a statement there yesterday that never was never, or you didn't, you know, mightn't be, and or it didn't mean never.
Sure.
I think that was a statement. I can't remember exactly. You can never say never. That was the statement. And he said, look, would you come back? Would you train? I said, sure, Brian, I haven't trained since the county final last November. I haven't been able to do a thing. You know me, like I like to be in the top, as top shape as possible. And he said, look, he said, we have 6 weeks to an All-Ireland semi-final. And he said, come in and train with us for 6 weeks. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But if it does, we'd love to have you as part of some part of the panel or even team if you're able to get that far. So I trained reasonably hard for the 6 weeks. So I would never have been in bad shape, but I certainly wasn't fit, and trained hard and played in the All-Ireland semi-final against Tipperary and played in the All-Ireland final. So from the point of view of, I was brought, but John Power had, you know, a few years previous, wasn't on the panel. Brian brought him back. Mm. Then, you know, he retired again later on. So from the point of view, if he felt there was something left there, there was something left there. And, you know, I suppose a lot of players feel there's that little bit more in you. Like, I retired in 2006 and Kilkenny won four All-Irelands in a row. Yeah. A lot of people said to me, you could have been there, you could have won another four, you could have been, ended up as a goalkeeper, you could have ended up as this. My time was gone. My time was finished at 36 years of age. And that was it. And, you know, I know I've seen David Herity come out, I've seen, you know, Jackie Tyrrell, you know, a few lads, even Charlie Carter back in my time. And I suppose ultimately, if you make a decision, that's a decision. And I think Brian's attitude, even with myself, you know, if you've made a decision to go, that's your decision, you know. And there's someone, it's probably not his, it's probably not for him to say, lads, I'm begging you to hurl. Because the way he looks at it is that, you know, if you want to hurl, and you're good enough to hurl, you'll be there. If you don't want to hurl, if you want to retire, it's not up to him to change your mind. Now, look, I don't know. Maybe he has changed other people's minds in the past. I don't know. But certainly from my point of view, I met Brian. I said, I'm thinking of retiring. And Brian said, well, it's up to yourself. Look, as usual, when you came back in 2002, there was no guarantee of you being on the team. Now there's no guarantee of you being on the team. We'd like you to be part of the panel and part of it. And if you make it, you make it. If you don't, you don't. But if your mind is made up, and I said it was, because at that time I was travelling up and down from Dublin and the hunger wasn't there. Just it's when it goes, it goes. And maybe for the previous 1 or 2 years, you know, I wasn't, you know, I obviously was hungry for the game, but I'd been missing a little bit more and more, maybe through injury or through the fact that, you know, there was other things also, you know, at work or whatever it was in your life, you were coming from Dublin, and maybe it was time for me to go.
Mm, that's interesting. So I guess part of the reason why people feel a little bit of coldness from Brian Cody when they retire is almost on the person who's retiring's shoulders. They feel that they still have something to offer, almost their subconscious is telling them that. And Brian Cody believes that once you've actually put the foot forward and say that you're leaving, for the most part anyway, your time is up really, because mentally you've checked out a little bit.
Yeah, well, I suppose even if it was myself, and, you know, over a couple of, you know, even like, as I say, I was manager, so particularly with Kilkenny under 20s and 21s, you know, and some guys are injured for a long period of time, and you need to go to them and you need to say, you know, like, you're in here every night, you're getting injured. You know, I have to say to you that you might be better off going away and maybe even taking a year off, maybe taking the next 3 months off, even though your ambition is to make this team, is to make a senior team. But you can't be in here trying to give it your best, being injured, going to the physio every night, not being properly able to train. You know, maybe it's time to actually take a rest, a break from the game. Okay, now I'm going away from it a little bit here. But if it's in your head, and if you have to get clarification, maybe from a manager, or maybe, it's, you know, to say, right, I'm thinking about it here. I don't think Brian is probably that man is going to turn around to you and change your mind. If your mind is made up, and like intercounty hurling, and if I was looking at it from an outside, you'd probably be very critical of Dave Parity retiring, and, you know, because he was a young guy, a fantastic goalkeeper, why is he retiring? You know, you don't know the ins and outs until it comes out later on. you know, and like I would say that the vast majority of players, if Brian Cody turned around to me in 2006 said, "We really need you. We want you on the team." Maybe there's another year. I don't know. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But I was prepared to go because I was prepared to go the year before. And maybe that's the way with a lot of players as well. I think Jackie Tyrrell might have felt he could have come on and offered something in an All-Ireland final against Tipperary or Cork. I can't remember exactly which one. Maybe it's Tipperary. You know, and we as players, you think maybe there's a bit more, but when you're looking at it then as a selector from the outside, maybe you're looking at it a little bit differently. You know, so
yeah.
to actually marry that is difficult. And I often would say, you know, when I was manager, I'm going to, you know, you're going to talk to players, you're going to coach them individually, you're going to do. But actually, when you're in that scenario, you actually don't get that time because, you know, by and large, you're actually meeting a player at training on the field and you have 5 minutes to say, look, there's a place for you on this team, but I don't know, is your attitude right? So let's up the attitude. You know, so I'm not sure you actually exactly get that amount of time that you think you're going to get with a player. And maybe the player themselves feel, oh, well, that fella's cold and he wasn't looking at me and I let in a goal or I missed a free and now I'm all of a sudden taken off the freeze, you know, or whatever that is. You know, you think there's an awful lot more to it. You think there's an awful lot more time involved. You think there's an awful lot more personal one-to-ones. But I'm not talking about any individual here now at all. But sometimes you meet a player and you go to him and you say to him, you know, how do you feel? I'm okay. You're going to be a sub. Okay, you're going to be a sub today. You know, or you're not on the. You get very little interaction back to you. You know, so when you want to have a conversation with a player, the actual interaction back to you is not great as well. And what I found that out with ourselves, you know, as management, you need that interaction back as well. And I do know for a fact with Brian will test you. You know, Brian could say to me, oh, you don't like a player, but that's his way of testing you. You know, right. You might even know that player, you know, but that's his way of coming in with a conversation. And I think if you're in bad form, which we all can be in bad form at times, or when you don't hear what you want to hear, I think that, you know, you can go away with that sort of thing too, you know. But I think from the point of view of management, I'm not sure what is the nicest way of any player return in any county. You'll hear about Brian Cody because he's around for a long time, but do we hear about other managements, the conversations? What conversation? You can be the nicest person in the world. I would count myself as a person who would be soft. I actually hate giving someone bad news, you know. And you go to a player and say, look, you're not on the panel today, and you might get a one word answer. Now, it's not vulgar, do you know what I mean? It's okay, but the interaction is not there, and it's very hard to have interaction with a player that's not willing to give that back, you know.
Yeah. That's very interesting, and I guess that's definitely part of it, that Cody's been around for so long, and also because the players who have retired have generally won a heap of All-Ireland medals and are very high profile, and everybody wants to hear from them, you know, so that probably paints a picture as well. It's interesting that you talk about retiring before the four in a row. Is there ever any part of you that felt regret around that period, even though deep down you knew that your body wasn't going to be able keep going? Was there ever anything inside your head thinking, oh God, I'm sorry I missed out on that unbelievable run of All-Irelands?
Well, yes, if I was younger, but no, in the sense of I felt that I didn't retire until Kilkenny won the National League of 2006. And I felt that Kilkenny were in a really good place. Was I in shape? I had no weight on me. I was reasonably fit. I was slowing down, obviously, at that age for the game. But I felt I had given it everything I had to give. And I got more out of it. As I say, my career was extended in 2002. I captained Kilkenny in 2003. I played in an All-Ireland of 2004. I played in an All-Ireland semi-final of 2005. You know, from a point where I thought maybe my career was ended in 2002, because of injury. So at that stage, I had been on the Kilkenny panel since 1988. It was a long time. And I knew from the previous year or two, you know, before I was always the fella that was in the top two or three when it came to laps around the field. I was always in the top one or two when it came to sprinting. I was always that guy. Now I was very much near the other end because fellas were just bypassing you. And I just felt that, you know, to play at the highest level, did I want to be a sub? Absolutely not. If I was a sub because I wasn't good enough, that was fine if I was committed to it. But it wasn't that I needed all Ireland medals in my pocket to glorify a career. As far as I was concerned, I had a brilliant career in terms of, I'm not saying I was a brilliant hurler, I had a brilliant career. I played in 9 All-Ireland finals, you know, and anyone that could turn around and say, you played 9 All-Ireland finals. And even though we lost some of them, I wouldn't give one of them up for a second, you know, and even though you might have regrets, even though I might have scored in one or two, there's no way I would have given. The experience was absolutely phenomenal every single time that I played. And I just felt that, you know what, to be able to compete at the very highest level, why should I take a place of someone that was now about to start in their career? Because I wanted to sit on the bench to be a sub to have an extra medal. There was no need for it.
Yeah, it's interesting as well. We were doing a series during lockdown, the Mount Rushmore of every county, the four greatest sports people. We went and did 32 of them. The Kilkenny one actually ended up being quite controversial, not because of you, but because Henry Shefflin and Brian Cody were both left off it. The thing about the Mount Rushmore in that particular case was that you were non-negotiable. You were up on the mountain immediately, and the selector said, DJ's up there anyway. It's a question of whether Henry or Brian Cody or both or none of them goes up there. Like, I know you're probably, maybe you'll give a modest answer to this, but why do you think that is? Why do you think you're the person that people look to as the figurehead of a great few decades for Kilkenny hurling?
I don't know, to be honest. Sometimes I find it hard to understand that. To me, just Henry when he came was just phenomenal. Brian, with his achievements both as a player, a captain and manager, was phenomenal. And I just don't know. I often hear that maybe I didn't play in as strong a team, but our team was strong. We're just the teams that were awfully Wexford. All these teams were very strong. It's a phenomenal honour, I have to say, to be like to be compared with Henry Shefflin, or to be compared with, obviously, Brian is a different thing because he's better known probably as the manager. But to be compared with Christy Ring, or to be compared with the modern day hurlers that are out there present, is a tremendous honour. And you know, I'm like flabbergasted at times when I hear that. Now, I've never seen Christy Ring playing, and a lot of the players of the past, I can't. But when you look at some of the present players from my era onwards, the 90s onwards, I'm flabbergasted to even think that you're still up there. So it's a tremendous honour. And that's not me trying to say, oh, look, he's looking for notice. Because it's just that when you look at, even look at the Kilkenny team, when you look at Owen Larkin, how brilliant he was, when you look at Richie Power, how brilliant these guys were. Do you know what I mean? And I'm there forward, like, not alone to Tommy Welsh, JJ Laney, Noel Hickey. Any of these guys were just phenomenal in their time, and there's just a wave of them over a 10 or 11 year period. So it's a great honour. I don't know why, except I would imagine that there is a huge amount of people that saw me in my career who might be my age and older, who love that era of the game. But I would imagine, like, there would be very few, even in my own club now, young fellas, if they were picking a favourite hurler, who would even have ever seen me hurl. So it's the likes of Henry, or even it's the likes of the modern day guy. Now, TJ Reid would obviously be a big one in Kilkenny. So I would imagine the modern young fella now wouldn't have seen that.
The one thing, though, that will stand you in good stead over time for those younger fellas in the club is YouTube, and the fact that clips are available to watch back and things like that for generations to come. And I guess, for Henry, maybe not so much for the backs now, but for Henry and yourself, there will be a collection of goals. There will be a collection of big moments that you came up with on the biggest days. That's a very interesting conversation to get into about how you become a hurler who's known for goal scoring and for those exploits in front of goal, that taking your points was not always an option for you. Like, I mean, we saw that goal in the Tipperary County final a couple of weeks ago, the Killadangan goal, the going for that when the point was on, even in the football with David Clifford a couple of weeks ago. What could you explain to us that mindset that you would have had, where the risk of missing actually didn't really compute with the massive upshot of getting a green flag raised on a big day?
Well, I grew up and I went to a little school in Gorn, and we had two teachers called John Ox and Dick O'Neill. And I was probably, I don't know, 4 foot five or whatever it was. I was a small fella. And they just encouraged me when I got the ball, just because I was quick. A goal, just goal. And I grew up with that kind of all my life. And I brought that as well into senior. And it was that, like, I got as much satisfaction out of creating a goal as it is scoring. Now, it's great to be on charts of scoring goals. But creating a goal is every bit, you know, taking on a man, taking on a second guy, laying off a pass, a good ball being in the back of the net. Like Jimmy Coogan, I'm often referred to as Jimmy Coogan getting a goal against the Queer. That gives me as much satisfaction of scoring it myself. But I was always, that's the way I was brought up. Anything, you know, if you had any, got inside a player at all, you were gone. There was a goal chance on, and I probably missed as many goal chances as I scored, but it was a great satisfaction, which is brilliant, and obviously a great lift to get in and score a goal. And I love the fact, you know, anyone that's you know, that goal in the Tipperary count, that would give me great satisfaction, because there was a pint on, and probably the best option was to take the pint, take it to extra time. But the head was put down, and obviously, you know, I can't remember his name now, but the fact that his head was down, goal was on his mind, and took it absolutely brilliantly would lead me to think that he's a goal scorer.
Yeah, like, I guess what you said there about the idea of thinking that you won't score half the efforts you take is almost part of actually scoring loads of goals. That realisation and that comfort in the fact that some of these are not going to hit the back of the net. Sorry, I was just looking out for the Killadangan goal scorer to going to use. Brian McLaughney is the guy I was looking for there. Who taught you this then, DJ, just to wrap up on this point? Was there somebody who pulled you aside at an early point in your hurling life? Or how did you find that eye for goal that set you apart?
Well, as I said, I went to a little school, and if you hit the ball over the bar in the school, it just gone out into another field and you mightn't get it. So a lot of what we had to do in school was score goals. So it was, so like the score in a match might be 10 goals and 2 pints to 9 goals and 2 pints, you know. So it was all, a lot of it was goals. The pitch was small and there was many players on it. So you had to score. So I grew up kind of scoring goals. And then as it led on, and I think there was always a great boost. A goal was always a huge boost. Because, like, great games in our times was maybe 2:15 to, you know, 3:09 or 3:10, whatever it was. Now you could have 25, 26, 30 pints in a game. You know, because the fact that the ball travels so far, guys are brilliant strikers now on the run. They can hit the ball over from the middle of the field. In our day, like a 65-yard free was a brilliant score. It was a long-distance free. So that meant a full forward line was getting a huge amount of balls. You can see nowadays that forwards don't even bother following in a ball. When a ball goes in, they assume it's gone over the bar. And that's a bugbear of mine. And it doesn't always happen. It's just that's the way it is. Because corner forwards, full forwards, they're coming out to field looking for the short pass. In our day, even the best of a striker, if it was 40 yards out, you were expecting them to miss it, you know. So a lot of goals in the past were got because a ball was mishit and it came into you and you were around the goal or there was room. When I played on a corner back, I played on a full back, whatever it was, or a wing back. You were playing on that guy for the game. Now maybe he was changed or you were changed to a different position, but you weren't playing on the same guy. He didn't follow you all over the field. Now you're followed all over the field. You go with the man you're on. In my day, if I was so untrue with a ball, at the corner back or fullback might come to me, you'd lay it off. Nowadays, very rarely will a corner, the fella that's following you is the guy that's on you to try and hook you or block you. You know, so the games are just different now. So when you get a half opportunity, the ball is put over the bar because a pint is a great score. Yeah. And very rarely now do I see goals being worked. Goals happen that there's a ball put in, maybe a fella running off the shoulder and bang is in. Whereas in our day, you work a goal, if that makes sense to you. You turn a lad, you go with it. Someone comes to you, you lay it off. And I think it's much different now. A goal happens in a game now, whereas a lot of in my day and previous that, you work the goal.
Right. There was a lot more planning that went into the move then.
A little bit, because once you saw a guy moving, well, then that's where the plan came into place.
Right. That is very interesting. DJ, it's been great chatting to you. Just a reminder that DJ is with us as part of the AirGrid official timing sponsorship launch. AirGrid, the state-owned company that develops and manages the flow of electricity across Ireland, has been a proud partner of the GEA since 2015. Best of luck with the championship, DJ, whether it's at Dublin or Laois. I hope the year goes well for you.
Please, God, we'll chat again soon.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.